Have you been trying to navigate the world around you, feeling like you're behind or you're missing something? Do you feel like you're riding a lawnmower in the fast lane of life? Well, you've come to the right place. Michael Lee and RB will break down and demystify the world of technology, health, and culture, leaving no stone unturned. So join us as we take this lawnmower into the fast lane and ride into the second half of life. Welcome to Lawnmower in the Fast Lane. Welcome to Lawnmower in the Fast Lane, where we ensure no person of a certain age is left behind. We're your hosts. I'm Michael Lee.
And it's me, RB.
Hello, RB, and thank you for joining us today, Fast Laners. Today, where we're going to be discussing joyful aging. I know we've been gone for a couple weeks, and how are you doing, RB?
Oh, I'm fine. I feel like I haven't aged more than 1 week in the last 3 weeks.
And I feel like I've aged 100 years. No, not really. So, yes, we're going to be discussing today joyful aging. This is an interesting topic that was actually brought up by somebody who brought up one of our other episodes, which is Brenda. So she is my aunt, and she had a couple topics. One was on conflict management, which ended up being so far our most listened to episode. So maybe we'll have some luck on this one as well.
I think Brenda's on a roll, and I think she knows what she's asking for, and I would love to hear more comments from her.
I would too. Speaking of comments, on a side note, really super quick, I would like to thank Emily, one of our listeners, for writing our very first Apple Podcast review. Thank you so much, Emily, for A, listening, and B, writing a review, because those reviews and those ratings on Apple Podcast actually kind of boost us up and get us more listeners. So I really, really appreciate that.
Do you think Emily's in line for maybe a bumper sticker, a Lawnmower in the Fast Lane bumper sticker?
I think so. I think we're going to have to get some bumper stickers or some kind of swag. I really like the bumper stickers so I can drive around and people go, what is that?
And who knows, every once in a while on a dark, lonely night in the middle of nowhere, you can see a car and go, what the heck? They've got a Lawnmower in the Fast Lane bumper sticker on the back of their car.
Emily is part of my, what I call my Dave Matthews family. And maybe she can drive that to that Dave Matthews shows and people will see it. So it would be fun.
And actually, let's slip her $5 and give her 100 bumper stickers and see if she can plaster them all over the cars that are parked in the Dave Matthews concert.
Love it. This is a great topic. I think we're as a society living longer, wanting more joy out of getting older. And so what are your initial thoughts just walking into the topic of joyful aging?
Well, honestly, I never really thought about it before as a specific topic. You know, two words together, joyful, and the definition of joyful is feeling, expressing, and causing great pleasure and happiness. And aging, growing old, and being elderly, those two things I don't think about as one topic normally. And so when you brought this up, or your aunt brought this up, I thought, oh, interesting, joyful aging. I mean, that opens a whole new world to me. It could be joyful foot care. There can be joyful botany. There can be joyful everything. If you look at it through the correct lens, you can make happiness anywhere if you want. And I wasn't prepared for it. I love it. And I'm ready to dig in. How about yourself? What do you think about with joyful aging?
Well, one of my first things when I started kind of looking at this topic was, what were my thoughts and what were your thoughts on aging when we were young? Because I think as a kid, when I saw quote unquote older people, and I'm putting that in quotes because it changes over time, obviously, I think I thought of, you get old and cranky. Didn't see in when I was a kid growing up in the 80s, I felt like you didn't see a lot of really happy aging people. And it could have been my perception as a kid because maybe I was terrified of like my grandparents or my great grandparents. But I was just, it was that scary thing if you get older and you just get cranky and you sit about in a recliner and you don't do a lot. And I remember thinking, I don't want to be old and cranky. Did you have any thoughts about when you were younger about what aging was?
Not really. I mean, I guess I would notice my own grandparents, you know, mobility became an issue. And I don't know if senility is the right word, but, you know, maybe your cognitive functions slow down a smidge. And, you know, for me, like television shows like Lawrence Welk and things like that, that I didn't relate to at all were, can I say, all the rage? I mean, I don't
know. They were.
They seemed to be. It was just a different, a different lifestyle. But for me as a young person looking at older people, it's not something that jumped out at me as boy, I cannot wait to jump in their shoes when I get to be, you know, that age.
I also did have, now as you're saying that, have a lot of exposure. My mom worked at the Salvation Army. She did a meal program for seniors. And now that I look back, maybe I just thought of my family was cranky. I don't know, because I really did grow up with a lot of seniors. It was such a part of our life growing up. But I don't think I ever thought of them as being aged. That's the part that's so weird, I think, is I looked at them and just thought, they're just old people. Like, I didn't put together age or what that meant or how that developed. It's an interesting thing now to look at aging from a whole different perspective of being 47.
Yeah, now you can look back at those younger people and say, wonder what they're thinking when they see people like me, for instance. Probably thinking the exact same thoughts that you thought when you were their age.
Yeah, I'm sure my nieces probably think, and my nephews probably think, gosh, Uncle Michael's old.
Yeah. Right. He didn't used to be so old, but God, he's losing his hair and now he's slurring his words. And did he just fall asleep on the couch after Thanksgiving dinner?
Probably would be me, actually.
Me too. That's just the way it goes. But just a real quick, a couple of things on my end. I lived in a 55 and older community for 3 years. And it's in the last 5 years, I'll say. Just to validate what you had kind of mentioned or were thinking, there are a lot of old people I noticed who are kind of cranky. And it wasn't just your family or maybe some of the people that you were around. I think it's kind of common, and I'm not sure why. And I think that's a different podcast. I don't know if they're caught off guard. They didn't think they were going to get old until one day they woke up and discovered they can't climb stairs anymore or something like that. And I also think I don't want to say a lot of pain, but I think they have a lot of aches and they just have a lot of signals, physical and mental signals that tell them, they have constant reminders that, hey, you ain't young anymore. And I think that eats at them a little bit if they let them. Again, I was in a community of 55 and older. There were a lot of people that were happy too. So I'll say it's a 50-50 mix from my perspective, but the people, the 50% that weren't happy, they were cranky.
So what can we do to make ourselves, as we're aging and the people out there who are, what do you think are some ways we can create joy while also knowing that we're going to age and things are going to happen to us?
I know you've done your research and I have also. I think it comes down to, just in a nutshell, is you have to be prepared. More than anything, you need to be aware that you are aging and you're going to get old, and you need to be ready for it. You need to see it coming. You don't just retire one day and then discover you can't do the things you used to do. I mean, I don't think it works that way. I think you need to constantly prepare. Something I read that I thought was very interesting. There's a Stanford social psychologist named Jennifer Aker, and she developed the 5 stages of happiness over a person's life that kind of resonated with me, because when I look back, I think, oh, well, that's kind of how I was. But I'm just going to go through it real quick. Stage number one is discovery in your teen years. So experiences and excitement for teenagers, those are the things that make you happy. that teenagers happy. And I thought, okay, I can buy that one.
Yeah.
Number two, in your 20s, happiness when you're feeling successful and capable. I was happy when I felt like I was doing a good job, and you become happier when it's validated by others. In your 30s, it's more of a life balance, family, health, and a good energy level, taking care of yourself. You're usually in your best shape in your 30s. And those are the things that make you happy. You're kind of sort of settling down. Your 40s is the age of meaning. Again, there's family, spirituality, community, and your impact on the world. That's when you start, you know, recycling and doing things that you think are going to make a difference in the world. And in your 50s and 60s, this again, Jennifer Aker is saying that you're happy, you're happiest when you're tied to feelings of control and you feel connected. There's a calmness. You're lucky to have gotten to the point you're at. You feel blessed. Maybe you've retired. Maybe your kids have actually grown up and graduated from college and they're starting their own lives. And those are the things that really make you happiest, to know that you've gone through this life journey to this stage, and now you're happy to look back and say, whew, you know, I didn't falter. I didn't take a wrong turn, and I didn't crash and burn. I actually got to this point, and I'm happy to be here. So it made a lot of sense to me to read that. Yeah. And so that's the starting point for me on happiness, joyful aging and happiness was, those are the things I think generally.
It's interesting because you and I, as I look through the list, it's funny, we're both in different places. I think that's the best part about this podcast, is the dichotomy of we're both in different places. I'm at that age of meaning, and you're in that savoring moment. So it's a very interesting thing, because I do think a lot about what I will be like in my 50s or 60s and hoping to find more peace. But I feel like I'm slowly getting there, but I definitely am more focused on like my community, my impact in the workforce, spirituality, family. Those are like really super important things to me right now. So it's very interesting when I listen to her five stages on there. Well, one thing that I was tying into that as well is, because we're finding aging and meaning and savoring all those moments and doing all those things, you know, I was trying to figure out why aging joyfully is so important, what that brings to the table. If you're able to do, like, enable to find joy in aging and where you're at, I found a couple things that really, you know, resonated with me. One that I found through just reading a lot of stuff is, when you age joyfully and you're more joyful, you live longer and there's more fulfillment for you, which is kind of ties back into that savoring thing that you brought up, and the meaning, because you're finding fulfillment. And then it also is contributing to relationships, helps a lot. And I think when you're, there was a study done, and I apologize, I don't have the specifics around it, but there's been actually multiple around the fact that the more people you have around you, the longer you live. So it's an interesting thing, because you want to maintain friendships. Of course, as we get older, our friendships change and we have less close friends. But there is something to, the more friends that you have that are close to you, that you're able to have there, the older that you live. I think it's having that support, which contributes to the relationships, which brings you joy, which makes you live longer because you're more fulfilled.
I think that makes perfect sense. I do know people, I worked with a couple of people that they made a point of surrounding them. And this, you know, one guy in particular, he was probably, I'll say 30 or 40 years older than I was. And he worked till he was 80. And a goal of his was to surround himself with as many people as he could. And he was, you know, he was sharp and he was going strong. I mean, he really was. He lasted till close to 90, I think.
I look at my stepdad's parents, and they lived, I think they were in their late 80s. They lived a very full life. They were always doing things at church, always spending time with family. They were constantly doing something that was connected to people. And I think they lived longer. And I really believe that because of that. Like, I think that, there's also a drive. I don't know if there's anything behind it, but I think there's a drive of like, I want to go do things, or I want to sit down and have a deep conversation with my best friend that makes you almost feel like I want to live because I want to go have those conversations. I want to be close with people.
Yes, I love it. You know, I did I mentioned before, I was a Toastmaster person, and I did a speech one time on blue zones. And a blue zone, for those that have maybe forgotten, there's 5 areas in the world where people regularly live to be 100 years old or older, and they're called blue zones. And one of the things that came out of the, and so people are studying these groups of people. There's one in Italy, there's one in Japan, there's a zone in Japan, there's one in Central America, there's one in Loma Linda, California. And I forget where the other blue zone is, but it doesn't matter. But so people are studying these people, trying to figure out, you know, why they live longer. And one of the things is, especially in Japan, that I believe Okinawa, the island of Okinawa, they have the largest female population over 100 years old in the world. And they can't wait to get up in the morning because they are doing these things. You know, they're meeting the children at 6 or whatever. They're going to meet the girls, and then they're going to go play tennis, or I don't know, whatever we're doing. That's irrelevant. It's the fact that they have purpose in their life. Every night they go to bed with a purpose for the next morning on what they're going to do. And that's kind of what you were saying. To me, that's proven, because these people in these blue zones live life that way.
You're going to probably touch on some of this as we move forward, because I have ways to age joyfully. I think we both have some lists in regards to that. My question for you is, when do you think most people start feeling like they're old and aging? I have a lot of theories on that myself, but what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, Michael, my thoughts come from the internet, because everything on the internet is true. That's what I was told. So if that's what I hear on the internet, then that's what I believe. And I have heard that the internet says the average age people start feeling old.
Please don't tell me that it's 47 years old. Ladies and gentlemen, he has just told me that I should start feeling old at this point. An internet statistic.
There you go.
I think that it is interesting. I look at my parents a lot. I literally just had this conversation last night where how weird it is to think about, like, I asked my mom, I'm like, do you feel old? And she said, sometimes, you know, sometimes you feel old because you feel like you got body stuff going on and aches and pains. Thing is, I have a hard time picturing her being old, because they're so active. They're on the go and they don't slow down. But once again, I think when I really step back, my mom and all my parents, they all have a lot of purpose and they do a lot of things to bring joy to their life. And I think that that is a big part of it.
The saying goes,
you're only as old as you feel.
Yeah, you're only as old as you think or feel and I think there's a lot of truth to that. Along those lines, though, I have also gotten off the internet, which is fact, I'm sure, because it was on the internet. But they said that when you need to start planning for joyful aging is before your bones, your heart, your digestive system, your senses, your teeth and gums, your skin and your sexual functions go kaput. So you kind of need to start planning ahead, because those things are going to happen to you.
I think that that is very, very, it's that whole maintenance before things get too far. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's great. I think this would be a perfect segue for us to talk about some ways to age joyfully. I got some really unique ones, but maybe we could kind of do a back and forth. Like you come up with a couple, I'll come up with a couple and go from there.
Love it. Yeah. Why don't you start?
So the first thing, I actually went and I found this really amazing website. It's called The Aesthetics of Age, The Aesthetics of Joy. And there's an article in there in regards to saying, the article is called Forget Aging Gracefully, Here's How to Age Joyfully, which I really love because it's kind of what we've talked about. And the gal who runs the site actually, her name's Ingrid Fattel. And I apologize, Ingrid. I know you're not listening, but I might have messed your name up. But it's Ingrid and then F-E-T-E-L-L. And I mentioned the name because she's also got a TED Talk on YouTube, or you can go to TED.com. And her talk she does is Where Joy Hides and How to Find It. And so I watched the TED Talk. I went to her site. And the things that she had, I loved. They're a little different, but they kind of work probably in balance with a lot of the more basics. So the first thing I had was seek out awe. And what she explained was there was a study that shows taking an awe walk, A-W-E, and focusing on awe-inspiring activities increases joy and feelings of generosity and kindness. And so she suggested taking like a 15-minute walk at least once a week. I think it's neat. Like I think about the idea that like you walk, but instead of just going for a walk, looking around, finding joy and awe in things, you know, maybe it's something just random. You know, we go on dog walks sometimes. And one time, you know, we saw an olive tree and we thought this would be really exciting. And my husband ate an olive and it was not, which you do not want to eat an olive off of olive tree. But then afterwards, as gross as it was, we both laughed. But we saw it, we tried it, we experienced it. And I think that's the thing. One of the other things I thought in regards to that was most bigger cities, not all, but most bigger cities have like a First Friday, where usually it's an art thing where you go and it's usually free art, there's exhibits. Going on an awe walk would be great for that, to just look around and find joy in the creativity, you know. Or my parents go for dog walks every day, and I'm sure that, you know, just looking around and seeing a tree that's got a weird look, or we always talk about the weird things we find. So that was the first thing I had. What did you have?
I like that. I want to just jump back real quick. Yeah. You said, and I forget her name already, the author.
Ingrid Fattel.
Fattel, Ingrid. She was changing the definition from, now I've heard aging gracefully for years, that phrase, but joyful aging, I'd never heard of. And I think I like the thought of joyful aging more. It's a happier conclusion. It seems like a happier conclusion. And I think that's, rather than aging gracefully, I think we should all be striving to age joyfully. I think we're going to be happier people because of that. And that was good. I don't know if I can top Ingrid, but stay physically active is one of the ways you can continue to age joyfully.
We've all had, you know, that relative that just, they get up, they sit in a chair and they watch TV and they get up and have a snack. But every time they get up, they're like, oh, it's just so hard to get up. And I don't want to be that way. And the only way you can really do that is to stay physically active.
And you have to do it almost every day. My Blue Zone speech, those people, so a lot of them live kind of simple lifestyles, and they walk everywhere. They walk to the store, they walk to church, they walk to their friend's house, they walk to the kid's house, they walk or they ride their bike or something. And that's their activity, and they do it every day. They're not trying to work out like we are, where they go ride the bicycle for, you know, they get 10,000 steps in and then they ride the bike for, you know, three. These guys are just doing their daily activities, and they're doing it in an active manner. What else you got?
So the next one I had on this list was a culture fix. And it's been shown, according to some of the studies, that attending cultural activities actually lowers mortality rate and helps keep your mind sharp. Going to a play, going to here we have botanical gardens, the zoo, things that are cultural, art exhibits. I think too, I don't think it always has to be anything also that's stuffy. And I say that like some people picture going into like an art exhibit and it's like, I'm going to go look at Picasso. But I look at sometimes something even fun. Like we had, I really wanted to go and I did not, but they had a candy museum. And it was a museum that was all made out of candy. And it was near here. And I think it's things like that, or even a Lego museum. Something that makes you feel comfortable, but get a culture fix. Like, I think going to Disneyland or Disney World sounds really exciting and cultural fixing and helps me feel lifelike. Definitely know my husband, that would not be his draw. Somebody that something for him would probably be walking more through a museum or walking through a botanical garden. So doing something culturally, it's been proven to lower mortality rates. And like I said, it helps keep your mind sharp. You're constantly seeing things.
I think it really does expand your horizons. And I personally like to do that stuff. I like to go to I'm kind of a sportsy guy, but for instance, I don't like baseball. I mean, I don't watch baseball. The games are a little too boring for me and they last like, I don't know, 4 days or something.
It feels like it.
And I want to go, but I have been to games and I've loved the heck out of them just because there's something I don't do normally. Or like you say, the botanical gardens. I love going there. I love going to plays. We've gone to some plays. I just feel like it really expands my existence. I really like symphonies. Yeah. It's a little expensive for me here in Phoenix to be able to go, although there maybe I haven't found the right fit. But in Portland, the Portland Symphony, it was like $30 a ticket. And it was a show. I mean, it was, they tried to entertain you for 3 hours with symphony music. I don't listen to symphonic music. I mean, I just don't know anything about it. But I like being in that environment because it helps to make a new me, kind of the way I look at it. And so I like that, what you had said, and I totally agree with it. I like being in different environments.
I also used to, when I was younger, go to the racetrack and watch the race cars go. I had a friend and she would be like every week, like, let's go to the racetrack. And we went and you smelled horrible, like car afterwards. And, you know, it was kind of fun though, but yeah, it was, but that's the thing, is the culture fix can be for anybody. You mentioned the symphony. I know in Portland, at least they used to have like movie symphonies where they play, the symphony plays the soundtrack to the movie while the movie plays. I never made it to one, but I know they had, like, for me as a sci-fi nerd, they had Star Wars ones and Harry Potter, and you could, you know, go do that. I know we actually went and saw the symphony one time, and it was actually Joan Rivers with the symphony, and she did her comedy and then the symphony would play. So it is that cultural, it's like, find what makes you happy culturally and go do it. Like symphony I love symphonies, but you know, watch Joan Rivers made the experience very different.
Oh yeah. I'm sure it did. Yeah. Yeah. And it's entertainment. When you really put it in a nutshell, it's entertainment for you for that evening for 3 hours or however long it is.
That's why I love concerts. You know, concerts are my thing. So what else you got?
Well, it's funny. My number two is socially active with friends and family and community. And so that kind of falls, I think that's in the same category that you just brought up. So I'm going to drop down one and say healthy, balanced diet, I think, is important for joy.
Oh, boy. Eating. I'm in trouble.
So you just lost something?
No, it's because it says healthy, balanced diet.
Oh, did I steal yours?
No, it was more that I need to have a healthy, balanced diet.
And we all know about healthy, balanced diets. In fact, I'm going to just jump in here real quick. And I've learned something really recently after I made my notes for this. And it's the longevity paradox. diet. Have you heard about that?
I have not.
There's this guy who he's claiming, kind of like when we did our sleep study, there was a doctor that I had read his book that felt that if you get 7 to 8 hours of good sleep per night, you're going to avoid, you know, all the problems that come with just bad health in general if you get your 7 to 8 hours of sleep. Well, this guy is saying if you have a good diet, the longevity paradox, you will live the best life possible. So basically, he says if you have two identical twins, this guy's really locked in on diet. You have two identical twins and they grow up. Well, okay. So they're split at birth and one of them stays with their birth parents who have a certain diet. They're your parents. They eat the same thing you did when you were growing up. And you, in growing up in that family with those people, you tend to eat the same thing as an adult. So pizza Friday night, roast beef and mashed potatoes for Sunday, whatever it is. That's the diet you instinctively pick up. You take that second twin who was separated at birth and you stick him with a opposite culture, maybe an Asian family, and they take on the diet that those people eat on a regular basis. So his point is, in a nutshell, the twin that stayed with the biological parents, that twin is going to end up with the same, I'll call, ailments as the biological parents get. If they have heart disease or as they age or, you know, swollen, whatever they're going to have a certain set of problems and it's due to their diet. The second twin that's been relocated to a completely different culture, he's going to end up, because of his completely different diet, he's going to end up mirroring the age of his new family and get dementia or whatever those people are getting due to their diet. And I thought it was an interesting concept. So,
it's more diet as opposed to inherited.
Correct. He's saying that gene, because there's a mindset that, oh, it's my genes. You know, I'm going to die of a heart attack just like my dad did because of my genes. But no, this guy, and he's a doctor and, you know, he's supposedly legitimate, but he's saying, no, that's not the case. You have the same diet as your parent and not the genes don't have anything to do with it. You're just imitating everything they did that put them in the position to have a bad heart. So there you go.
That's interesting.
I thought it was too. So there you go. There's my healthy, balanced diet. And that's why you don't want to be a twin living in a fatty household.
So my next thing that I had was to stimulate your senses. So what that entails is it's doing things, once again, like viewing art, adding plants, colors, smells to your home. And one of the things that some of the belief is that the more you're stimulating your senses and keeping your brain active, which we've mentioned before, can lower dementia and Alzheimer's in some cases. You're basically making your brain see more things. So something like I said, seeing art, adding plants in your yard. So when you're walking into your backyard, it's more colorful. You know, putting things around your house that you know, stimulate your senses and smells too. So it's not just what you're viewing, but what you're smelling or your textures, things like that. So that's the next one that I have. What about you?
I like that. And so you're stimulating your senses, maybe sound also, maybe chirping birds, music, and so visual.
Waterfalls.
Audio. Yeah. Waterfall. Very good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. And chocolate chip cookies. So you might as well use the taste too.
Oh, chocolate chip cookies.
Like that.
But I'm on a Whole 30 diet. So talking about balanced diets, but I also really want sugar. So that chocolate chip cookie smells so good in my head.
Yeah. Actually, this guy, so back to the longevity paradox diet is what I'm going to call it. Yeah, he says no sugar. Just so you know, you're on the right path, mister, as far as one guy's concerned. good dental hygiene, Michael. Good dental hygiene. Did you know, and I didn't look this up, dang it, or I mean, our research crew is so good, but they did not give me the statistics on good dental hygiene. But I happen to know that in the 1800s, I think the majority of the people died from poor dental hygiene. Their teeth would rot and they would swallow the pus. And it would get in their stomach, and then they would ingest this. Gosh, what am I trying to say? I'm just totally ruining this, but they would end up dying. Their bloodstream would get full of poison or toxic pus is what I want to call it, but that's not the technical term. Well, I know a guy that I used to work with. He had a rotten tooth. You know, it leaks bacteria into your mouth and you swallow it. And it gets in your bloodstream and it creates a real problem. But he ended up having that happen to him. And he went into a coma for like six months or something. And he started having strokes and things. And he had to quit his job. And it was kind of a sad deal because he could have taken care of that. Good dental hygiene is something that you don't want to ignore.
I was never one that went to the dentist regularly as a youngster. I mean, as a little kid, I did, but like probably in my 20s and 30s, I wasn't that good. Now I go every 6 months, and I feel that it is important. It's that whole maintenance thing. One example that, you know, describing what you were describing, I'm not comparing people to animals, but it's why you really want to get your dog's hygiene done. And they talk about that when you have pets, because if you don't clean their teeth, they can get heart disease because of all that bacteria going in there. So, I mean, people aren't any different when it comes to dental hygiene. And I really, as I've gotten older, tried to work on that.
Okay, well, I'm sure you have more.
I have a couple more. One that I really loved. And this one, as a kid, I should probably live forever just based on me as a kid. The next one I have is to re-feather your nest. And what that means is taking time to adjust the needs of your home. Change up a room, change up your house, move some furniture, or say that painting doesn't look right. I feel like we keep talking about art, but that painting doesn't look right. Or I'm going to move this from this room into this room, or I'm going to move my office around. You know, as a kid, I'm sure my parents thought something was really wrong with me because I would usually spend at least one weekend a month and I would completely clean my whole room and I would move my bed around to a different section of my room and move my toys around and move my desk. Like I would be constantly changing things. I think it is interesting to think, if you sit in a chair and you watch TV and you don't move and you know where every single thing is and it sits there for years, you're not activating your brain. I also personally think when you're moving things around, you're also moving. So it adds to that. So that was the next one I had.
Wow, that's good because I had forgotten all about that, but I used to move my furniture around all the time myself.
Maybe it's a Pisces thing.
I just until you brought it up 4 seconds ago, I had completely forgot that I used to change my bedroom all the time. Yeah, I was, and you'd clean it all up and you'd stand back and go, yeah, this is the way this is supposed to be. That's good.
Exactly.
I got one it's kind of a touchy one. I'm not, and honestly, again, the dang research department, I don't know if they've just been having too many parties after work or what. I have no details on this, but you're supposed to discuss your sex functions with your doctor. I'm not quite sure why. I don't know if it's because things aren't working right or just to get an idea where you're supposed to be at. I'm not sure.
I think that that's a big thing. I think it's part of, though, I think you're right. I think part of it is a quality of life, of finding more joy. It's also a tough thing, I think, for a lot of people to talk about with their doctor or in general.
Yeah, it is a hard thing, especially when you get older.
No, I think it's an important topic. I think it would actually be a great topic for a future episode, just because I feel like it's a topic, especially once you get to a certain age, that you don't want to talk about. And it's hard because, like you said, you don't just go out to a happy hour with friends and say, so how's your sexual functions been going, you know? And it can affect it. I think it can be affected physically, and then there's mental things that could be affecting it. So there's a lot to that. And I think it is something that brings people joy. And if you can't do it, obviously we've seen so many people, I mean, with Viagra and things of that sort, it obviously is a big enough thing. That people are really just trying to figure it out, but they're too embarrassed to talk about it.
I think that's well said. I think you're right. Maybe that discussion does need to take place. Yeah, I was kind of looking at that as sort of a, just, you know, something I got off the internet. But now that you bring it up, maybe it's something I should personally take a little more seriously. So how about you?
So I had one that is very interesting. It's based on a study called the counterclockwise study. This one, what it said, and I think this is a really important one, and I think it's something that we do. I do this often. I'm trying to put it in the proper terminology. Basically, the study, what they did is they replicated a large part of 1979 for a bunch of adults that were 75 years and older. They spent a week in a residential program designed to take their perception of what they were living and take the time back. So what they basically did is they set the room up, they set everything up as if it was when they were younger. And what it did is said that 90% of the residents are allocated to one of the conditions in there, which was having to do with same activities, activity control, and some other different things. Every participant was assessed for medical, cognitive, psychological, and age appearance at four different points. And again, at the 6 and 12 month level, what they found in the study was that people lived longer, and they increased their age, it said, from actually about 25.4 to 53.5% for the people who took place in this study. What the study was showing was sometimes to take yourself and immerse yourself in the past. It doesn't mean necessarily going and saying, like, you're not saying I'm going to only talk about the past, but spending time to go back and relive things you did. And it could be something as simple as, you know, going and riding a type of bicycle that you haven't ridden since you were a little kid, going back and looking at pictures of things that you did as a kid, basically kind of putting yourself back into your youth.
Yes.
And I think it is important because we get older and we just think, well, now I'm old. Sometimes, you know, when I go home to Spokane, I'll go places that I went as a kid and walk around in those places. And there's a wooded area I used to walk around, and I love. The funny part is I never told my mom where that was. And now as an adult, she takes her dogs walking in that area that used to be my place as a kid. So it's kind of neat because I get to go back and walk in that space and remember when I played in the woods and was a knight or a space alien or whatever it was, and immerse myself in that. Or maybe it's going into a store I haven't been in since I was a kid, something like that. Putting yourself into a place that reminds you of being young. And this study said that it has a really huge, profound effect on your capacity to grow and be more joyful as you grow, because you're seeing how far you've come in life.
Wow, that's good. I like that. So what I'm hearing is I should buy a new Hot Wheels set and set it up and start playing with it like the old days?
Exactly. What they said is that men that came out of it, which I thought was interesting because being the time, you know, 65 and older men, and this took place in the 1989, and they placed them into 1979 environment. But men, they said after this, stood taller, that people actually had greater dexterity. And the best part too, which I really thought was interesting, was that they had even better vision than they had before within 12 months.
Wow.
So it's something to definitely look into if people want to check that out. It's called the counterclockwise study. Obviously, it's a little bit longer to explain than simplicity that I've made it. Immerse yourself in a little mini time warp.
I think I'm going to do that. I feel like I need to write that down somewhere.
Well, I'm going to put it in our notes. We'll put it in our notes for the podcast if people want to review that.
Okay, I like it. Well, my last one is just go see the doctor. You know, I mean, you, for instance, I have a new growth on my head here, and I'm going to have it looked at. So just make sure the doctor sees it.
Yeah, make sure you get your checkups. I just have a couple more. So we did talk about mobility. One thing that I learned is that being mobile increases your hippocampus, which is a fancy way of saying a part of your brain that makes you age and different things. And it has to do with dementia. And there's a big part in there. I don't want to get too technical because I'm not a scientist. Maximizing mobility can increase your hippocampus by 2%. Which helps reverse 1 to 2 years of age-related decline, reducing memories, deficiencies, and dementia.
Wow, that's pretty good.
And then the last thing that I have, it's exactly why we do this podcast, is staying up on technology. Mm. And this, I really think, is really interesting and important because I think some people get to a specific age and they go, oh, I can't do that. The truth is you can. It's just a matter of how much you want to. And what this said too is technology can assist in feeling more connected. And this can mean, it doesn't mean that you're embracing every technology. It just means maybe you're going to play a little video game with your kids, your grandkids. Maybe setting up something fun like a little game on your phone, even solitaire, you're figuring out technology on your phone, doing something fun like watching a TikTok, which are little fun videos on a little app. Or maybe it's just setting up an Instagram to stay in touch with all your friends and family. Anything that really makes you feel connected to technology. And I was just thinking, like, even like a cell phone for some people, like, it's okay. You can just have a cell phone and maybe it'll make you feel more connected. I know that, like I mentioned this before, but my grandma had computers before anybody else I knew had computers. And she went to school to learn how to use a computer. And she had an iMac when they were the big giant colored iMacs. And I'd go to her house and she taught me how to use her computer. This is, you know, probably in 90, gosh, it was probably like 95, 96. Whenever those came out. And I think that was part of what, you know, she stayed pretty active with technology for a long time. And I think that there's a big thing to that. And I think it's, you know, something even as simple as listening to a podcast, sharing it with your friends, you know, those things go a long way. The more you're scared of technology, I think it can just be rough because then it's intimidating, which can cause anxiety, which thereby doesn't bring joy. And there's this quote, and I can't remember where I found it, that I really loved that kind of ties a lot of what we're saying together, which is we can cling to the world as we shaped it and refuse to engage in the new world, or we can adapt, which means remaining curious and actively participate in it. And I think that that's a big part. I think it's part of what is happening in society now is instead of being in the world that was shaped, we can have the opportunity to adapt and create a new world. I did also want to add in here before we wrap up too much, that there is actually a a page. It's called Age Joyfully. You can just Google Age Joyfully. That has some tips on there about aging joyfully. They even have, if you decide to use some technology, they have a Twitter and an Instagram. And this particular person, they post about aging joyfully. They have a podcast about aging joyfully, just to kind of throw that out there if people want just some more resources of how to age joyfully.
Yeah, and along those lines, I don't know if you discovered this, but when I first typed in joyful aging, I got like 100,000 hits. I mean, it's a big deal. It's everywhere. People have books, websites. I mean, it's everywhere. And podcasts, like you say, it's a big deal. So for me, one thing that kind of resonated, I didn't know how to say it. And I was going through reading and kind of studying up on this, but I had a feeling about joyful aging. And then I read this and I thought, that's exactly how I feel. But it's just a quick little sentence that said, joyful aging is a balance between the pluses and minuses. And I felt like that was really true, because for true joyful aging, you got to get rid of the negatives, and then you have to hopefully increase the positives. And that's really how you make it as joyful as you can. You can't just add positives and say, I've done my job. You kind of have to get rid of those negatives also.
I love it. I really do. I think you're right. I think it's a balancing act to age. You know, we get to make that decision. We don't need to be stuck by the limitations that we've seen in the past. You know, in the past, we may have seen people who have aged and we feel kind of that scary. Doesn't have to be that way anymore. We can make our own, we get to make our own rules now.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And as long as you're aware of it and planning for it, you know, you don't get kind of blindsided by certain things, hopefully, you can create your most joyful aging scenario. I had one more thing that I found on here, and this, it doesn't really apply as much as to joyful aging as it does to Lawnmower in the Fast Lane. But there was a writer named Carol Karsten for The Union. So she gets a little shout out, but she had written, and this is a quote, oldsters seem to be regarded as people who drive their life car, like a lawnmower, in the slow lane, looking in the rear view mirror because they had nothing to look forward to. I thought that was just an interesting statement, and it sort of really sums up what our podcast is all about, I thought. So that's my last bit of information for a joyful aging podcast, young man.
Awesome. What are your, as we always do, what are your final thoughts about joyful aging?
I think it's something you need to plan for. And I think it's something that everybody can get on board with. I don't see any barriers to keep anyone from being joyful as they age. Again, I was in a 55 and older community, and there were a lot of grumpy people. And you know why they're grumpy. It's hard for them to get out of bed in the morning, and la-di-da, and I can go on and on. But there's also a lot of happy people and joyful people. And I kind of think it's attitude or planning. I'm not sure, but I would like to take the high road and be one of the more joyful people as I move along in life. What are you thinking?
I think as somebody who's at, what is it, the age they start thinking they're getting older, I really want to continue to find purpose. I think we can all learn a lot by trying to find ways to joyfully age. And I think when I look back, and I'm looking forward as well, and the people that I do know who are seeming to age joyfully, they seem to have joy in the simple things, and things like that were on the list that I had, just being active, experiencing life. And I think that's what I want in my life. And I feel like you can find joy in some of the simplest things, and it doesn't have to be a big thing. That's pretty much where I'm at on that. Thank you, Fast Laners, as always, for listening to this episode of Lawnmower in the Fast Lane. As always, we appreciate every comment, thought, idea. Feel free to email us. Feel free to find us on all the social medias. We're on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. We're on all of that, but you can also email us at lawnmowerinthefastlane@gmail.com. We do reply to all messages. And much like the last couple of topics we've had, we do take suggestions. So definitely let us know what you would like to hear. And just remember, the more comments and likes we get, the more listeners we get, and we can reach out to more people that are in the same place that we are in life. So thank you for listening, and have a great rest of your week.
Michael, it's time for another This and That.
This is the portion of our show where we share something from the past week that's been on our mind, or that we're just enjoying for the fun of it. Rob, what This and That do you have for us this week?
Oh boy, you're putting me on the spot. I wasn't really ready. I was hoping you would start.
So this week, what's been on my mind actually a lot has been mental health. It also happens in May to be Mental Health Month. And so I just thought, I recently had an email from work that talked about the importance of mental health. And one of the things that's a passion for my life is mental health. And for me, what that means is taking care of yourself and your mental well-being, whatever that means. So for some people, it's listening to a podcast. For some people, it's sitting around during the day, one day, and watching TV. Other people, it's meditating. I think for me, a big part of my mental health has been going to therapy and working through a lot of those type of things that affect your life from a young age and going on forward. I feel like I have to spend a lot of time doing things for mental health and making sure that I feel my head is clear and clear enough to be able to not take on the load of the world. So what my challenge for a lot of the people out in our audience is, do something for yourself that creates your own mental well-being, whether that's going for a walk, whatever brings you peace, feeling like your mental health is wavering. Just reach out to the people you can, reach out to hotlines that if you need to, anything it takes to keep yourself healthy. We all deserve it. And I think that's the big thing for me. We all deserve to have. And Rob, what about you?
Wow, that's going to be a tough one to follow, Michael. I got to tell you. So this week, my this and that, you know what I've been doing? What I've been doing for the last couple of months, and I've been working on this week also, and I think I'm finally getting to the point to where I'm sort of refining my schedule, my daily habit schedule. It's got some weird things on it. I'm one of those people that feel a lot better about myself when I accomplish things like I take my blood pressure, I make sure I take my blood pressure medicine, I do yoga, I do all these little things that I do them in the morning, and they kind of set me up for the day to feel good about myself the rest of the day, because I feel like I've taken care of the things that I need to take care of that I don't always do. Sometimes you get busy, like for instance, I'm painting the whole entire inside of our place right now. Sometimes my old habits would be, I'd get up, I put on my grubby clothes, and then I'll start painting, and I'll paint until I'm too tired to paint anymore, and then that's it, I'm done. But I'm not doing that anymore, or now these days, I'm getting up, I'm taking care of the things that I feel like I need to take care of, and then I'm tackling whatever project it is I'm going to tackle, like podcasting, for instance, or painting. So to me, it's about developing a schedule that works for me. It doesn't make me feel tense if I don't accomplish some of those things, but it also keeps me on task, and I feel better when I'm on task and accomplishing the things that I really do in the back of my mind want to accomplish. So there you go.
Awesome. I really love it. Well, thank you all for listening to our thoughts for the this and that. And we look forward to chatting more with you next week.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Lawnmower in the Fast Lane. Please join us next week for more Gen X discussion. And don't forget to like us and follow us on your favorite podcast listening channel. You can find us on Twitter at LawnFastPodcast, Instagram at Lawnmower in the Fast Lane Podcast, and Facebook at Lawnmower in the Fast Lane Podcast. We also invite you to email your thoughts and comments and ideas for future topics and ways to improve this podcast at lawnmowerinthefastlane@gmail.com. Until next week, thank you. Goodbye.